them, the story is totally different. You know, they feel more connected. They see more khair and goodness in trials, in imtihan, in test. For Zainab Kubra, salamullah alayha, even Karbala was the most beautiful place. Why? Because again, she was connected to khair mutlaq, the absolute goodness. And her life, when, yeah, the way she has grown up with Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, and Umm Kulthum, you know, we have few stories about her, because Karbala was something highlight in her life, you know, that history. Exactly. Unfortunately, history, you know, always does injustice in that sense, that we know only big incidents of that person, not more than that. But I truly remember like her life in Kufa, because whenever we recite Surah Maryam, we connect, we engaged with Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha, because the way she, as a daughter of, like we can say, the father of eloquence, means Imam Ali alayhi salam. You know, she's the daughter of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And the way she used to deliver her lectures of tafsir and interpretation of Quran, it was so much, you know, like amazing especially for the ladies of Kufa. Because it has been written, again because of Karbala, that when she came after the Karbala to the same city of Kufa, you know, all her students and her companions, female companions, they all remember her the way she used to deliver her lectures before the Karbala. That bravery, you know, that confidence that, you know, she has gotten from her mother, definitely, and father and brother, you know, so all that beautiful, mashallah, tarbiyat and training we can see in this amazing, I don't know how to describe the flower which Panjitan alayhi salam has decorated, Zainab-e Kubra salamullah alayhi. Therefore, she's Zainab, you know, like beautiful, the adornment.
The adornment of her father.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Sister Radia. This was a very timely break, because we're going to go for a short break and then we're going to be back with this special episode of Heaven in Grief on the life of Lady Zainab salamullahi alayha on the occasion of her demise. Don't go away, inshallah, we will be right back.
زارك الدمع من كل عيني مثلما زار قبر الحسين فاكتب الشوق في وجنتيك
زينب السلام عليك زينب السلام عليك
تحمل الريح نوح العليلة نحو أخت ستمضي قتيلة عمتي فاحضني طفلتيك
عمتي السلام عليك عمتي السلام عليك
والخيام التي أحرقوها والصدور التي مزقوها تطلب العفو من والديك
زينب السلام عليك زينب السلام عليك
وانت بجروح تندبي نعلة هزل خويا لا تروح يا حبيبي تمهل عندك اخوان ما الهدف فان
ريح الوين يا هو العين
دير العيون للعليل وحنينه قلبه محزون شوفي عينه وجبينه الصبر عاد عدنا أجسام
ريح الوين يا هو العين
قد سمعنا صهيل الجوادي معولا بافتجاع ينادي ليت موتي على راحتيك
زينب السلام عليك زينب السلام عليك
هل سمعتي أني شبابي أكبر قاسم في التراب اقبلي العطر من وردتيك
عمتي السلام عليك عمتي السلام عليك
حتى السيوف ذاب وقرح جفنها حولك تطوف وانت كعبة حزنها تلبية وصوت من حشى الموت الاسهام تحتفر من ألمها تلطم الهام من أسفها وندمها تور الدموع بالأسى شموع الحسين بليل الفجيعة قد أتى وهو يعلي رضيعة امنحي الطفل مما لديك
السلام عليك زينب السلام عليك
والرضيع يشق القماطة قطع الحزن منه النياطة ويداه تقول إليك
عمتي السلام عليك عمتي السلام عليك
عمتي صوت عمي يدوي وهو بالجود شوقا يروي كفه صافحت معصميك
زينب السلام عليك زينب السلام عليك
عمتي الماي لو يجي ما أريده جرحي والضماي وانت عني بعيدة قلبي منهار وانت لنهار
ويح الوين يهوى
العين عمتي والسهم ما ذبحني دمعي معناه فقدك انت الجرحني زينب الروح مرسى الجروح
ويح الوين يهوى العين
اقبلي من جراحات رملة من دموع الرباب وليلى والمآسي على ساعديك
زينب السلام عليك زينب السلام عليك
مول الصبر عينا واعتلت من حنايا سكينة عمتي كفك في دمعتيك
عمتي السلام عليك عمتي السلام عليك
والبقايا بجمر الحنين إنه صوت أم البنين زينب السلام عليك يا زينب
السلام
Welcome back, dear believers. Heaven in Grief is a special program on the occasion of the demise of Lady Zainab Salamullahi Alaiha. So, Dr. Radia, we talked about how the personality of Lady Zainab Salamullahi Alaiha is the result of the adornment of the Panchtan, or the five beloved personalities. All of these, the way they treated her, the way they respected her, and her name, Zainab, the embellishment of her father, these have all led to her personality in the event of Ashura, which she's so confident, she's so brave, she delivers lectures, and more important than anything else, she says, I saw nothing but beauty, you know. So let's talk about patience. We know that Lady Zainab Salamullahi Alaiha is known for her patience. So how was this feature most reflected in the life of Lady Zainab, her patience?
Yeah, one of the title of Lady Zainab is Ummul Masa'ib. Mm-hmm. And maybe as an ordinary person, we feel, oh yeah, she's so poor. Like, oh, I feel sorry. Like, she has suffered a lot.
Grief.
Yeah. And mother, she's a mother of all masaib and grief. Even one more title, we have Ka'batul Razaya. Ka'ba, again, like mother, like center. Razaya, Razia, we pronounce a lot in Ziyarat Ashura. Again, Musriba. Mm-hmm. Again, grief, again, trials. So she is the one to whom all the trials are, you know, focusing or, you know,
addressed.
Going. So she's Ka'batul Razaya.
And I remember once when I said to one revertee, this title, she started to weep, to cry, and she said, really, this is the title of daughter of Imam Ali and granddaughter of Rasulullah? I said, yes. And it shows, this title shows her higher rank among, like, maybe if we compare it with Umm Kulsum, you know, like her sister. Because other than Umm Kulsum, they are Ma'asumeen alayhi salam. So, you know, as much as you pass the test and pass the griefs in a very beautiful way, you will achieve a higher rank and daraja. So you can see like why we are just escaping from difficulties and trials. This is the question. Because we don't know that whenever some kind of trial comes, yeah, grief comes in our life, that grief can just be develop the mean of our progress. You know, that grief can groom us, but we don't look at that no. way. You know, we look at very, very negative way. That is the cause of all the problems. Otherwise, you know, sabr, oh, wow. We would love to do sabr. How can I do sabr if I don't have any tests and trials? We don't want any trouble in our life. We want trouble-less life, which is just illusion, which is not a reality. So, you know, I usually say to my son Kazim that, you know, your younger brother Hussein, because he's a mashallah active boy, so I say, well, sometimes you feel that he's troubling you, so just name him Sawab and Sabr, because of him you are getting so much reward in the eyes of Allah Ta'ala. You're getting so many bank balance, because if Hussein wasn't there in your life, my son Kazim, you would have a very smoothing, you know, comfortable life.
Right.
No one would disturb you when challenge you. So he's a challenge, you know. He has come to your life. So you are so fortunate. Otherwise, inna Allah ma'as sabirin. Allah is with sabreen, you know, but how can I be sabir if I don't have any challenge? So if we look in that way, we all would say, اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم. Oh Allah, I want the path, you know, the beautiful lifestyle of those to whom you have sent your blessings, means they have all these trials. Like I'm asking every day in Surah Ham that I want to become a sabir. Definitely the test which I can pass, the test which can groom me, you know, uplift
fits in my capacity.
Exactly. Not more than that. So no one can, inshallah, take that wrong meaning that, you know, these people are just talking very negatively that, oh, no, we don't want tests, we don't want trials. No, trials and tests means that which can definitely uplift your, inshallah,
and
position.
We also know in the Quran, inna ma'al usri yusra. So Allah never, you know, showers you with all the difficulties that you can't handle. And it's always the fact that He has created us and He knows what our limit is. So if we have, sadness or a hardship befalls us, we should know that we are worthy of, we have that much capacity that we can sort of handle.
Yeah,
that
I remember
grief.
Many, you know, when I do counseling, you know, many ladies that just literally they come and tell me like that, you know, like if I have this trial in my life, that means I'm capable. You know, I can handle it.
This is
so positive. This is a very
good. This is ma ra'aytu illa jamila.
Yeah, exactly. La yukallifullahu nafsan illa wus'aha. And then, you know, like Quran is full of positivity, full of hope. What inna ma'al usri yusra, as you have mentioned, that, you know, after this, you know what, whenever grief comes, hardship comes, there's some good tidings is just waiting for you. Just wait for those treasure which Allah tabaraka ta'ala has just hidden from you and just testing you that how you are able to reach and just open up those doors. So automatically you love to do sabr.
Yeah.
And even about Lady Zainab salamullah alayha, they say even sabr itself has been so much astonished by the sabr of Lady Zainab salamullah alayha. So she has reached in that, you know, peak level of sabr. But we as a follower, we can just, you know, just step nearer to her, inshallah.
I really enjoyed this discussion. I hope that you, dear listeners, also enjoyed. Thank you so much, Dr. Najafi, for your presence in this show. This was Heaven in Grief, a special episode on the occasion of the demise of Lady Zainab Salamullahi Alaiha. Our condolences to all of you, dear listeners, on this occasion. We hope that, inshallah, you will follow us in the coming programs. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Round the World with Reporters.
Rome's Association of Palestinians called a sit-in in the vicinity of the Italian parliament to draw attention on Israel's COVID-19 vaccine program, which excludes the nearly 5 million Palestinians who live in the West Bank and Gaza Strip under Israeli military occupation. The rally was supported by a number of left-wing groups and unions.
The fourth Geneva Convention stipulates that Israel has a responsibility as an occupying power to ensure that medical aid reaches the occupied territories to combat the coronavirus crisis. Responsibilities also include providing vaccines in a non-discriminatory manner to Palestinians under its control.
Israel has the duty to provide COVID vaccines to Palestinians. The question is why nobody talks about it here in Italy. TVs and newspapers praise Israel's vaccination campaign, but they don't say a word about how Israel is a militarized country which is not observing its international obligations and pays each vaccine dose double the price, promising pharmaceutical companies patient data.
While Palestinians' right to health care is undermined, Tel Aviv has pledged to send thousands of spare coronavirus vaccines to foreign allies that have accepted Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem, such as Czech Republic, Hungary and Honduras.
These vaccine donations are the latest example of Israel's new expression of soft power. Tel Aviv rewards or sways those that have little access to vaccines in exchange for their complicity. This confirms the absence of morals and values of Israel.
We are calling on Italy, the EU and international community to take concrete measures to force Israel to provide Palestinians with vaccines. We are not begging, we demand what is ours.
In January, the United Nations voiced its concern over Israel's refusal to vaccinate the Palestinians, but the appeal has gone unheard so far. Max Civili, Rome.
Across South Korea, vaccinations against COVID-19 began, with more than 5,000 nursing home residents and care providers scheduled to get their jabs by the end of the day.
I was thinking of the elderly patients at our nursing home who have been exhausted and sad about not being able to see their families, so I'm glad to be the first person to be vaccinated. I hope herd immunity is established so that our patients can see their families and everyone can return to daily life without masks.
President Moon Jae-in observed people getting their shots, seeking to encourage people to be vaccinated when it's their turn. South Korean officials say the country should achieve herd immunity by November of this year. Herd immunity is achieved when a high percentage of people have been immunized, preventing the spread of a contagious disease. But about half of South Koreans surveyed are hesitant to get their shots. South Korea had been successful in limiting the spread of COVID-19 during the initial outbreak a year ago, but has seen waves of the virus infect hundreds of people each day since November last year.
country.
There are many reasons why I will get my shot right away, but I think during the last year of COVID-19, the government has done well to prevent it spreading, so I trust them in terms of the vaccine.
South Korea has received vaccines, but I'm hesitant to get it. It's because in the UK, many cases of side effects have been reported, so I'm a bit reluctant. I want to watch what happens, and I'll get it if it's okay then.
Seoul's November goal of herd immunity may also be complicated by supply chain challenges and drug-resistant variants of COVID-19, with a return to normality more likely in 2022. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The nursery home in the vicinity of Tehran, and people are waiting to receive the first dose of their COVID-19 jab. At this phase, which is the second, the elderly and those with underlying diseases and the disabled will get the vaccine. The country's health minister, Said Namaki, attended the retirement home in Kahrizak to launch the campaign. He told reporters that these people will be vaccinated free of charge.
Fortunately, today the second phase of corona vaccination began across the country. At this stage, in addition to people working at the ICUs of the hospitals and the more vulnerable ones, the elderly will get the jab. We launched the campaign here at Kahrizak Nursery Home, but as of tomorrow, at most of the nursery centers, this will continue.
Press TV asked the minister when the normal people will take the vaccine, and he answered that hopefully by September, most of the Iranians will be vaccinated.
Based on the priorities, first off the healthcare staff and then the elderly and people with specific diseases, as well as those injured during the Iran-Iraq war, will be inoculated. Afterwards, it comes to the normal people, and I think most of the target groups will get the shot by mid-September.
We also interviewed the head of Iran's welfare organization, who told us that in the first stage, some 20,000 doses will be allocated to nursery centers across the country.
Over 14,000 elderly people are receiving services at nursery homes across Iran. Out of them, over 3,000 were infected, but some 2,200 got well, 506 people are under treatment, and unfortunately, 375 ones lost their lives despite our efforts. At this center, 1,400 aged and disabled people will be vaccinated within 2 days.
The Islamic Republic kicked off the first phase of COVID-19 vaccination with administering the jab on medical staff working at some 600 hospitals across the country. Iranian health officials say indigenously produced shots will be used in the later stages of the campaign. Over 110,000 people have been vaccinated up to now. Iran has so far logged more than 1.6 million COVID-19 cases with over 59,800 deaths.
Iran began its COVID-19 vaccination program on February 9th. The top priority group of vaccination are doctors and nurses who are working at intensive care units of the hospitals. The next group are these elderly people and the ones with underlying diseases. Human Abedi, Kahrizak.
Venezuela's Congress, also known as the National Assembly, has requested the government of President Nicolas Maduro to expel European Union Ambassador Isabel Brillante out of the South American nation as a diplomatic action countering the recently launched sanctions from the EU against the Bolivarian Republic. The Maduro administration has denounced the European measures, describing them as illegal and harmful to the economy of Venezuela. Venezuelan officials say that the EU, along with the U.S. government, are plotting to produce a humanitarian crisis in the Latin American country in order to bring down President Nicolas Maduro. Although a UN human rights envoy recently declared foreign sanctions on Venezuela have no legal basis and must be lifted, the EU has ratified its decision. Venezuelan authorities claim they will legally confront the sanctions.
Okay, van 34 meses.
The EU, just like the US, is criminally targeting Venezuela. However, this unfair aggression will not oust Maduro.
Meanwhile, in the opposition, some say elections in Venezuela would ease the elimination of sanctions.
If free elections were held here, all foreign sanctions would blow over, but Maduro refuses to do so.
Nonetheless, socialists insist that neither the EU nor the US can judge what free elections are.
We have already had free elections guaranteed by many foreign observers, so the EU and the US are lying for political purposes.
Caracas slams the EU over violating international law with illegal sanctions. The expelling of the European ambassador is widely seen as a response to the bloc's economic policies against Venezuela. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
This is a specialized meeting on the latest studies on the coronavirus. Organized and hosted by Bagayatullah University, the event brought together epidemiologists, virologists, and other medical experts to present their team's latest findings on prevention and treatment of COVID-19.
We tried the so-called plasmapheresis in treating COVID-19 patients. What is plasmapheresis? It's a method of removing blood plasma from the body and re-injecting it into the bloodstream. We conducted this method on 28 COVID patients, and it was effective so far. We need to gather a large sample to achieve more reliable results.
We conducted a single-centered retrospective observational study of 60 laboratory-confirmed COVID patients and administered low-dose prednisolone in combination with naproxen and lopinavir. This helped reduce the length of patients' hospitalization.
Since the pandemic broke out in Iran, Bagayatullah University has dedicated its R&D centers to COVID-related projects. So far, it has launched 200 research projects that seek to find a way to tackle the pandemic. Among them is a recombinant-based COVID vaccine that is making its way to the human trial phase.
We are wrapping up the animal trial stage and will soon begin the human trials of our vaccine. Our university has become a hotspot of major projects that center on COVID-19. We were amongst the first center that proposed plasma therapy for COVID-19. We're also conducting research on stem cell therapy and other viable treatments for the novel disease.
With the Bagayatullah vaccine, Iran now possesses three viable candidates that have made their way to the human trial. COVPARS, which is a recombinant vaccine, and COVIRAN, which works based on a weakened coronavirus. This, as Iran has already started its mass inoculation program using Russia's Sputnik V.
Bagayatullah Hospital has since day one been one of the most active places in the fight against COVID-19. Now, as many biotech firms are concentrating their efforts on prevention and vaccine development, this center has also paid attention to treatment. Researchers here say they're very close to an effective COVID medicine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Almost 1 year after the first positive case of COVID-19 was confirmed in Afghanistan, the country has now launched its first COVID-19 vaccination campaign. Representatives of medics, Afghan armed troops and journalists are the first ones who will receive doses of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine donated earlier this month by India.
Today I congratulate the people of Afghanistan on the launch of the first stage of COVID-19 vaccination. This is a big opportunity for the people of Afghanistan. I request all government bodies, media, and our religious scholars to cooperate with each other to implement COVID-19 vaccination campaign smoothly.
Afghanistan received 500,000 doses of AstraZeneca's vaccine from the Serum Institute of India, which is producing the vaccine for mid- and low-income countries, earlier this month. The spread of COVID-19 in Afghanistan hardly hit the Afghan society due to mismanagement and lack of medical equipment. However, officials here say the government is committed to implement COVID-19 vaccination campaign all over the country.
We don't expect any miracles. We need full collaboration of the entire society. So let's help this campaign to be implemented justly.
Taliban has announced its backing for the vaccination campaign. However, the inoculations comes amid relentless violence despite intra-Afghan talks. As official statistics estimate, up to 10 million Afghans that make nearly a third of the population might have been infected with the coronavirus. Nearly 60,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and over 2,000 deaths have been recorded so far.
Afghan officials say the pandemic is still a serious problem for the country and urge health workers to vaccinate the whole nation in a fair and transparent manner. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The passage of time will never let the world forget the war crimes former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein committed against the innocent Iranian people. As part of its heinous crimes, the Iraqi dictator bombarded northwestern city of Sardash in 1978, killing 119 innocent civilians and exposing more than 8,000 to toxic gases, which maimed them forever. But Saddam was not alone in this eight-year war, and there were several countries, including Germany, France, the UK, and the US, that assisted him by arming his regime by chemical weapons. The Islamic Republic has always stressed that those complicit in Saddam's war crimes must be brought to justice. Therefore, in the presence of the country's top officials, an international conference was held in Tehran to look into the legal and international claims of the Islamic Republic in this regard.
Many countries gave Saddam intelligence, political, economic, military, and media support. All the world witnessed that. These countries all stood against the great nation of Iran, but the United Nations could not play its role. The UN did not declare the Iraqi regime as the aggressor and the perpetrator of war. This is the question that the international community must ask the UN. Why the Security Council did not stop the aggressor from committing crimes against the Islamic Republic?
In the face of the chemical attacks, the international community turned down Tehran's frequent requests for deployment of experts for field investigations, something that Iran's foreign minister blasted during this event.
The Iraqi regime used chemical weapons against Iranian civilians and non-civilians, and also the Iraqi people. In six or seven reports by the United Nations, it was declared that the chemical weapons were first used against military forces and then civilians. But the United Nations does not have a good record in supporting international law, and during the imposed war, it did not even use the means to make power balance.
It was also stressed at this conference that the assassination of the former Iranian IRGC Quds Force Commander General Qasem Soleimani is top on the agenda to be followed up as part of this plan. Thinkers and researchers from 17 countries presented their papers on the legal aspects of the imposed war on Iran. These experts, in both virtual and in-person methods, elaborated on how the foreign countries helped Saddam's regime in killing civilians. Human Abedi, Tehran.
Delivering a speech at the 46th session of the Human Rights Council of the United Nations, Venezuela's president Nicolas Maduro denounced the damaging effects of ongoing illegal sanctions by the U.S. and its allies against the Bolivarian Republic. Maduro outlined that Washington, following its regime change policy, leads a coalition of states that the European Union is part of, which is implementing a long series of punishing measures to deliberately bring about a humanitarian crisis in Venezuela and overthrow his administration. Maduro mentioned details of these measures.
Through illegal measures, Venezuela has been deprived of $30 billion in cash, which are part of the assets of the Republic abroad.
In this light, the socialist president strongly condemned the U.S. government and its allies over their abusive actions against the Venezuelan people.
Those who have taken away Venezuelan assets and resources have shown their cruelty, even worse at a time of a pandemic.
Although some opposition figures in Venezuela argued that the U.S. sanctions are a needed political tool to force anticipated elections in the Latin American country, legal analysts say that such sanctions are totally illegal and unacceptable.
What the U.S. is doing to our nation violates international law and all human rights instruments. There is no way to justify such a crime.
President Maduro denounced over 450 illegal sanctions U.S. and its allies imposed on Venezuela. Maduro pointed out that despite the massive economic aggression, his socialist government will not be overthrown. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
The Gaza Strip began its coronavirus vaccination campaign using the Russian Sputnik V vaccine. Medical workers will be the first to receive the jabs. The vaccination comes after long delays by the Israeli regime that only allowed a small shipment of the vaccine to reach Gaza last Thursday, after coming under heavy criticism by human rights organizations. Another shipment of the Russian vaccine arrived then through the Egyptian-controlled Rafah crossing on Sunday.
Today, we begin the vaccination of COVID-19 in the Gaza Strip, and God willing, we will be able to control the spread of the deadly virus and have herd immunity.
Nearly 55,000 people in the blockaded Gaza Strip have been infected with the coronavirus, mostly since late August 2020. Some 550 Gazans have also died of COVID-19.
The Gaza Strip is one of the most overpopulated areas in the world. Vaccination will play a major role in preventing the coronavirus pandemic and lowering the number of deaths in case we can manage to inoculate people as soon as possible. First doses would go to frontline medical workers, vulnerable patients, and the elderly.
Local authorities in the Gaza Strip struggled for months to lower the coronavirus infection rates through strict measures. The Israeli blockade has compounded the struggle of health workers in Gaza, undermining their efforts to contain and track the spread of the coronavirus.
This vaccination campaign is one of the main measures of the Ministry of Health to control the spread of this pandemic, along with other protocols. This vaccine will give immunity to those who receive it, and in turn will lower the number of daily infections.
Hundreds of Gazan patients have already lost their lives in recent years due to the Israeli regime's inhumane practices under the watchful eye of the international community.
As vaccination begins in the blockaded enclave, experts say Tel Aviv must end its illegal policies and remove any barriers that may hinder Palestinians from accessing proper medical care. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the assassination of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018, according to a new intelligence report that the Biden administration released on Friday, 26th of February, that offered the world a reminder of the brutal killing. The article that you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Julian Barnes, David Sanger, Mark Mazzetti, Michael Crawley, and Michael LaForgia. The piece is titled Saudi Crown Prince is Held Responsible for Khashoggi Killing in U.S. Report. Stay with us for more. Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the assassination of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018, according to a new intelligence report that the Biden administration released on Friday, 26th of February, that offered the world a reminder of the brutal killing. An elite team of operatives helped carry out the killing, the report said. The team reported directly to Prince Mohammed, who cultivated a climate of fear that made it unlikely for AIDS to act without its consent, according to the report. It omitted the brutal details of Mr. Khashoggi's death, including the dismemberment of his body with a bone saw after Saudi officials lured him to their consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. But the Biden administration took no direct action against Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, instead announcing travel and financial sanctions on other Saudi officials involved in the killing and on members of the elite unit of Royal Guard who protected the Crown Prince. The Biden administration concluded it could not risk a full rupture of its relations with the Saudi kingdom, relied on by the United States to broker peaceful relations with the Israeli regime. Cutting off Saudi Arabia could also push its leaders towards China. Lawmakers of both parties praised the release of the report, but some Democrats, including Representative Adam Schiff of California, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, spoke out in dismay that the administration stopped short of more severely punishing Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman for killing of Mr. Khashoggi. Khashoggi was a legal permanent resident of Virginia who was critical of the Saudi government in the columns that he wrote for the Washington Post. There are ways to bring about more personal repercussions without completely rupturing the relationship, Adam Schiff said in an interview. Adam Schiff added, "This is an official U.S. government statement that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia has blood on his hands, and that blood belongs to an American resident and journalist, and I think that's very powerful." The 2018 assassination of Jamal Khashoggi and the brutality of his death, detailed in news reports at the time, shocked the world. And it disgusted American officials, including the CIA director at the time, Gina Haspel, according to current and former intelligence officials. Gina Haspel and other American officials listened to a recording obtained by Turkish intelligence that not only captured Jamal Khashoggi's struggle against Saudi agents and his killing, but also the sounds of the bone saw being used on his body. The Saudi government issued a blistering response to the report's release and the penalties, rejecting the document as a negative, false, and unacceptable assessment about its leadership. It is truly unfortunate that this report, with its unjustified and inaccurate conclusions, is issued whilst the Saudi kingdom had clearly denounced this heinous crime, the statement said. It noted that the kingdom had taken steps to prevent a repeat of the killing. It prosecuted 8 people in connection with the murder. Much of the evidence the CIA used to conclude that Prince Mohammed bin Salman was culpable in Jamal Khashoggi's killing remains classified. But the report's disclosure was the first time that the American intelligence community had made its conclusions public, and the declassified document was a powerful rebuke of the Crown Prince, a close ally of former U.S. President Donald Trump, whose continued support of him prompted international outrage. The release of the report signaled that President Joe Biden, unlike his predecessor, would not set aside the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, and that his administration intended to try to isolate the Saudi Crown Prince. "We assess that Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved an operation in Istanbul, Turkey, to capture or kill Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi," said the report, issued by Mr. Biden's Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines. The decision to rebuke the Saudis without punishing Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman directly was the result of a weeks-long debate among aides to President Biden, who during the 2020 presidential campaign called Saudi Arabia a pariah state with no redeeming social value. 2 years earlier, Joe Biden called out the Trump administration for its inaction after Jamal Khashoggi's death, calling it embarrassing and dangerous. President Biden's newly formed national security team advised him that he could not bar the heir to the Saudi crown from entering the United States, nor weigh criminal charges against him, without breaching the relationship with a key Arab ally, according to officials. They said that a consensus emerged inside the White House that the cost of such a breach in terms of Saudi cooperation was simply too high. For Joe Biden, the decision was a telling indication that his more cautious instincts had kicked in. In an interview with Univision on Friday, 26th of February, President Biden said that he spoke yesterday with the Saudi king and not the crown prince. Mr. Biden added that he had made it clear to him that the rules are changing and we're going to be announcing significant changes today and on Monday to hold the Saudis accountable. It is outrageous what happened. Ultimately, the Biden administration announced penalties against Saudi officials, including a travel ban and freezing of assets of the kingdom's former intelligence chief, and sanctions against members of a paramilitary unit that took part in the assassination. The U.S. State Department also announced visa restrictions against 76 Saudi nationals accused of suppressing or harming journalists, activists, and dissidents. And more will be eventually be applied to others around the world as the administration expands enforcement of a new Khashoggi ban, the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said. The relationship with Saudi Arabia is bigger than any one individual, Anthony Blinken added on Friday at a news conference at the U.S. State Department. Blinken said, "What we've done by the actions that we've taken is really not to rupture the relationship, but to calibrate it to be more in line with the interests and our values." Dennis Ross, a former Middle East negotiator and foreign policy aide in administrations of both political parties, applauded Joe Biden for trying to thread the needle, calling the matter a classic example of where you have to balance your values and your interests. "We are now doing things that show a clear difference with the previous Trump administration on democracy and human rights," Dennis Ross added. The four-page intelligence report contained few previously undisclosed major facts and reiterated the CIA's conclusion from 2018 that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. It made its case based on smaller pieces of evidence and the CIA's understanding of the Crown Prince's control of the Saudi kingdom, which intelligence officials have long said led him to a high confidence conclusion of his culpability. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman viewed Jamal Khashoggi as a threat and broadly supported using violent measures if necessary to silence him, the intelligence report concluded. American intelligence agencies learned that Saudi officials had planned an unspecified operation against Mr. Khashoggi, but the report said the United States has not learned when the Saudi officials decided to harm him. Members of the hit team flew to Turkey on 2nd of October 2018 after Saudi officials lured Jamal Khashoggi, who was seeking paperwork to marry his Turkish fiancée, into the consulate building in Istanbul. While the team arrived in Istanbul prepared to kill Jamal Khashoggi, American intelligence agencies were not confident that was their only authorized option. The spy agencies could not rule out that Prince Mohammed bin Salman might have preferred to capture Mr. Khashoggi, an American intelligence official said, adding that the CIA and other intelligence agencies have high confidence in their judgment that the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for an order to either capture or kill Jamal Khashoggi. Khashoggi's body was never found. According to the report, Prince Mohammed fostered an environment where his aides feared that any failure to follow his orders could result in their arrest. This suggests that the aides were unlikely to question Mohammed bin Salman's orders or undertake sensitive action without his consent, the report said. The report listed 21 individuals involved in the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, including members of a hit team. The operatives worked for the Saudi Center for Studies and Media Affairs, at the time led by Saud al-Qahtani, a close advisor of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Mr. al-Qahtani's official job was the media czar for the royal court, and he was once in charge of the campaign to use social media to attack Saudi dissidents online. The report noted that Mr. al-Qahtani had said publicly that he did not make decisions without the Crown Prince's approval. The report said that seven members of Prince Mohammed bin Salman's elite protective detail, called the Rapid Intervention Force, or RIF, were part of the 15-man team that murdered Jamal Khashoggi. The unit has carried out a campaign of kidnapping, surveillance, detention, and torture to crush opposition to the Saudi royal family. Members of the RIF, or the Rapid Intervention Force, would not have participated in the operation against Khashoggi without Mohammed bin Salman's approval, the declassified report said. From the moment Mr. Khashoggi's death was discovered, Saudi officials sought to deflect blame from the Crown Prince. The Saudi government imprisoned eight people in connection with Mr. Khashoggi's death, trying them largely secretively. Though five were originally sentenced to death, after one of Mr. Khashoggi's sons said he and his siblings had forgiven the men who had killed their father, a Saudi court reduced the sentences to prison terms. Adam Schiff, the Democratic representative from California, said he met with White House officials on Friday, 26th of February, to press for more personal repercussions on the Saudi Crown Prince. "I don't think the president should be meeting with him. I don't think the president should be talking with him," Mr. Schiff said. "I think the administration should explore ways to go after assets that he controls." Ahead of the report's release, President Joe Biden spoke to King Salman of Saudi Arabia, and officials have said President Biden will speak only with the king, his counterpart as head of state, though others in the administration might speak directly to the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Representative Tom Malinowski, a Democrat from New Jersey, who was the Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights in the Obama administration, said a visa ban for Mohammed bin Salman should be mandatory under existing law if the Secretary of State has credible information that he committed a gross human rights abuse, which the Secretary of the State just told us that he has.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, True Asceticism. There were Sufis who adopted and promoted as a solitary goal of existence excessive abstinence from the worldly delights, frugality, and voluntary poverty. They upheld that the source of all goodness in this world and in the hereafter was in having little or nothing, and in withdrawal from people, while the source of all evil in this world and in the hereafter was in having much and in mixing with people. They, as a result, denied themselves many types of permitted food, drink, clothes, and many other legitimate worldly delights, sometimes to the extent of becoming so frail that they were unable to perform basic errands. Some event went beyond mere bodily torture almost to the extreme of self-immolation. They refused to possess virtually anything, but often had to depend on other sources for their scant provisions, irrespective of whether those sources came from their family members, friends, or even government officials. In short, such people observed strict corporeal, abject poverty, erring not as much in the aims and objectives as in means and methods. The whole operation, instead of enriching them spiritually, in the end impoverished them even further, both physically and spiritually. So this is what some Sufis ended up doing, which was wrong. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the true asceticism, and we gave you a description of what some Sufis and their ideology had them do when it comes to asceticism. Just because they understood it wrong, they went down a path that led to their physical and spiritual poverty. Now, there is nothing virtuous in coveted excessive asceticism, poverty, and pacifism, basing them on God's will and believing that nothing can and should be done about it. Those Sufis articulated several traditions of the Prophet to the effect that poverty was Allah's preference and it was a source of the pride of the Prophet, who always found much gratification in it. But those traditions are plain forgery, as Islam in no way encourages deliberate excessive asceticism, poverty, and passiveness. This passivism and this poverty, which is self-inflicted, this is not the way of Islam. Certainly, Islam sees neither affluence nor poverty as inherently either good or bad. Islam sees potential goodness as much in affluence as in poverty. Just as it sees potential evil as much in affluence as in poverty. Consequently, the Prophet sought refuge in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from the evil of the trial of the affluence and from the evil of the trial of poverty, as well as from the evil of debt. So remember, brothers and sisters, in your life, Islamic asceticism is very clearly defined, and it is not the path of the deviants, which completely abandoned the world and which did not fulfill their responsibilities. Be responsible, be spiritual. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.